How do you do, ladies and gentlemen? Here is another transcribed program relating to the people's business, relating to an unbelievable condition that exists in Detroit's receiving hospital, the chief hospital for the city in Detroit. Suppose we start with a question. If a member of your family had a nervous breakdown, and that happens, you know, to the best of us, and were taken to the receiving hospital, would you like him or her to sleep on a filthy pallet thrown on the floor of a dark stock room? Would you like to have him have the sort of sleeping arrangement you'd be ashamed to give a dog? I don't believe you would. The fourth city of the United States, however, gives its mental patients at receiving hospitals exactly that sort of treatment. Do you doubt it? Come with us on a tour of receiving hospitals. Come with us up to the third floor to what is called the psychiatric division. Up in one of the wide elevators, past the barred doors, down the long corridor grossly overcrowded with mental patients who stare with tense curiosity as we make our way in and out among cots thrown down in the hallway, over mattresses flung on the floor, to a room just 15 feet square where 20 men, are required to sleep on pallets on the floor.
We are now in one of the stock rooms in Ward 3, Division 1, which is one of the psychiatric wards. Here, the patients are helping the orderlies take down a great pile of cots. Because of the overcrowded conditions in this particular ward and in the other psychiatric ward, a supply of cots must be maintained, and they are stacked up in the daytime, but are put down in the hallways and in every conceivable space around the ward at night in order that the patients might be allowed to go to sleep. Here there are some, how many patients ordinarily are in this ward, Dr. Howard?
Ordinarily there are 54. I think now there's 126.
126 men in the ward designed for 54. Well, aren't you breaking just about every file law that's written?
I imagine
putting down these cots in the hallways? Isn't there also a requirement that beds should be a certain distance apart?
Well, that's all true, but there's nothing we can do about it.
Well, what has piled the situation up on the hospital?
The thing that's really caused is the fact there's no place to send the patients that have already been committed to the asylum or institution. There's 228 patients that are waiting to be transferred to a hospital someplace else. That is an institution for the insane.
And that is just about your overplusage here?
Well, that's true, yes.
Well, how many in this ward will sleep in the hallways tonight?
Well, I'll find out exactly for you.
Meanwhile, while Dr. Howard is finding out exactly how many will occupy hallways in violation not only of every building law, but of every fire law in Michigan, let me tell you something about this stock room in which we are. This originally was a bathroom. But because of the emergency which has arisen, some of the bathtubs have been taken out and it's used as a storeroom.
There's 122 patients tonight, and there'll be at least 30 to 40 sleeping in the hall.
And ordinarily, they're just 56.
54.
I'm putting just exactly 28 in this one long hall.
Yeah, in the long hall. But we have sleeping in here.
I have 6 or 8 sleeping in here.
We have 6 or 8 sleeping in the bathroom here. There's 28 in the hall. And how many have you got in the dining room?
I will have 18 in the dining room.
18 in the dining room. How many are there all together that haven't beds? The difference
there
between 50?
There are 74 that haven't beds tonight. 74 cots are being put up.
Do you have much of a turnover in this ward? Nice.
No, we do not. This is entirely a mental ward, and we do not have much of a turnover. We have patients that have been here for months and months.
Waiting to be cleared out to the state institutions?
Yes.
And how long has this condition existed?
Oh, I haven't been on this ward so long. But the last... past 6 months, at least.
The last 6 months this condition
yes,
has existed?
At least on this floor.
Well, tell me this. Are these mattresses here against which you are almost leaning? Please move just a little.
Yes.
Wait just a little bit. Do you mean to tell me that human beings sleep on those mattresses?
I certainly do.
Aren't they unbelievably filthy?
They are.
Haven't you anything else for them to sleep on? Won't the city supply you with decent bedding?
Well, they're replenishing some of our mattresses right now. We got 5 or 6 new ones today, and we'll have some more tomorrow.
Well, why isn't... But, I beg your pardon. Go right ahead.
But these mattresses are the mattresses we have been using.
How long have they been in service?
I couldn't say.
Well,
but
would you permit anybody that was related to you to sleep on a mattress like
no,
that?
No, I wouldn't. I don't put these people to bed on these mattresses because from choice I do it because it's necessary.
Is that due to the parsimony of the city? Is it due to the fact that they don't know the situation that exists?
I don't know how they could help but know the situation exists.
Across the hall in what is known as Ward 2, virtually the same condition exists. And here we stumble into a visitation from the city council. The mayor and members of the city council are making an inspection of conditions as they have found them. Suppose we see if we can make our way up into the midst of the crowd which is following them, accompanied by newspaper men and many cameramen. And also here, suddenly I find a distinguished visitor from New York. Doctor, I wonder if you'd tell me what do you think of the conditions that you found existing here?
The hospital is, of course, very crowded. And where too many people are in too small a space, all functions are interfered with, sir.
Are you going to make a report to the Mental Hygiene Association on the conditions that exist here?
To the board.
Make a report to the board. Did you come out especially to make that report?
Yes, to study the situation before making a report.
I see. Thank you very much. This is the ward in which most of the police prisoners have been held. Prisoners who have, for one reason or another, developed an illness or, among other causes, have been shot by officers in the course of making an arrest. Not all of the prisoners in this, not all of the inmates, rather, of this particular ward are highly disturbed. The cots have been piled up, ready to be put down. As yet, the mayor and the committee from the council has not finished with its inspection of this particular ward, and the patients are waiting patiently, as patients are wont to wait, until the visitors get out of the ward so that they can throw these temporary cots down in the long corridor, which is here about 75 feet long. This corridor has rooms on both sides of it, and I understand originally was intended for some 56 patients, yet there are at the present moment 3 times that number housed here. Of course, the situation is not the result of a condition that arose yesterday, but it's a cumulative effect of conditions that have existed for a long, long time. The city originally built this receiving hospital for the care of some 400 patients, and instead of 400 patients, it has at the present moment about 675. I see the Mayor Dick Reading has started down the hallway. How do you do, Mr. Reading?
Fine.
How are you, sir?
How are you, Duncan? That's fine.
Fine and dandy, sir. And what do you think of the situation?
Well, I think we have
a
pretty congested place here. We need more room. We need more help. And many other things that we could do if we had more money.
Just what are you going to do with it?
Well, we just started in to analyze it now. I was through this institution January 3rd, I think, to see it from top to bottom. The thing I think we'll have to do is get the state to take care of their psychopathic cases. And then maybe we'll get along with the rest of it.
There was a statement made recently, Mr. Mayor, that there were several thousand persons committed to state institutions who were still walking the streets of Detroit. Do you know what that number was?
No, I do not. But we do have a direct obligation here, which we must take care of.
And how many patients... do you think is on a waiting list for the receiving hospital alone?
I haven't any idea.
Do you intend to find out before you...
Definitely.
...make your...
That's part of my business.
Decision?
That's part of my business.
Thank you very much.
The children's ward of the receiving hospital presents an entirely different picture from that found anywhere else in the hospital. Here the walls are bright. Above the brightness of the walls, there are pictures in colors taken from the various Mother Goose stories. In a child, it lies in any of the cots here in this ward can be entertained by the story of Mother Goose, which they read from the wall. Here is the fox and the three little pigs. Here is the old man that went to sea, Jack and Jill. Here is the old lady that lived in the shoe, Humpty Dumpty, the fox and the sour grapes, the old King Cole, and various other pictures done in relief against the walls. The brightness of this particular ward is added to by flowers, which have been sent by some of those who are interested in the welfare of the children here. Perhaps in the background you can hear the cries of one little child who is not quite so happy. I'm going to see if I can get a story from a little boy up here who I understand was a newsboy and fell off of a bicycle or something of that sort. Is that how you got hurt, son? Did you fall off of a bicycle? Or did
A bicycle ran into me.
A bicycle ran into you? Mm-hmm. Where was it?
On Brainerd Street between 6th and Brooklyn.
Well, what happened?
I went at the corner to get a paper, and I was coming back, and I was over at my uncle's, and he was coming towards me, and he was looking, he had glasses on, he was looking down towards the ground, and he ran into me. It was right at the alley.
What is your name?
Emma.
Emma what?
Demley.
Emma Demley? And do you have to lie here all the time with your foot in this queer-looking apparatus that's hung up above the cot?
Mm-hmm.
And the cot is tilted so that you have to lie downhill, don't you? Have to lie with your head downhill. How long have you been here, Emma?
2 weeks this Tuesday.
2 weeks this Tuesday?
No, 2 weeks last Saturday, I mean.
Well, you are certainly bearing it very bravely. Where was your leg broken?
Right in here.
I see, right above the knee there. Or was it right below the knee? Which?
Above.
Right above the knee. And now you have to lie here with your foot in a sling, with a lot of different gadgets and pulleys and ropes and apparatus up above you and tilted upside down. Does it get a little tiresome now and then?
Yes, sir.
Well, maybe some of those who are listening in will write a letter once or twice, probably, to Emil
Demley.
Demery, in the children's ward. Let's hope that they do. Now we leave Emil grinning widely at the opportunity of telling some people to write to him, and why don't you do it? Because it is lonely lying in the hospital, particularly for an active little kid like Emil, about 8 years old perhaps, and the nurses on duty here will be mighty glad to read your letters. Here's a little girl over here who seems a little happy about it all. What's your name?
Ilona.
Huh?
Ilona.
How do you spell it? Do you know? How old are you?
Five.
Five, and your name is Dolores. What's your last name, Dolores?
Tilly.
Huh?
Tilly.
Speak right out loud.
Tilly.
Tilly? Yeah. Dolores Tilly. And what's the matter with you? Have the doctors told you yet? What your trouble is? They haven't told you yet. Well, how do you feel today? You feel all right?
Yeah.
Well, I think you're being very, very brave about something, because I know that you wouldn't be here if you were all right. And here's a little youngster over here that's just about knee-high to a duck. Just as bright and happy as it can be. We don't know what the trouble is. Howdy. Can you talk? Oh, you'd rather play with this microphone than talk, hadn't you? I don't believe you can talk, can you? No, you can't talk. All you can do is just play with the microphone. It looks kind of like a baseball, doesn't it? A baseball with a lot of bright stripes around it. Well, you don't know what the trouble is yet, because I think you're just about 2 years old, probably. Here's a little boy over here who seems just a little bit unhappy about it all. What's your name?
Dickie.
Dickie? And what's the matter with you, Dickie? Why are you up here? Have they told you yet? And it just doesn't matter much, does it, Dickie? You're just here, aren't you? What's your last name? Huh?
I don't know another name.
Ain't got no other name, but you don't feel badly about it at all, do you? Okay, thank you, Dickie.
And now let's go down to the emergency receiving room, where a constant stream of hurt men and women file through. Some of them to stay, some of them to be patched up and sent home.
Traffic accident cases on the weekend present by far the most of the work, which is done in the emergency receiving portion of the hospital.
In the past 4 or 5 minutes, there have been several of them. Most of them, fortunately, of a minor nature, which have been received in the hospital and attended to expeditiously and dexterously and sent on their way. Dr. G.S. Bates, who is chief resident physician in charge of admitting, tells me that on Saturday morning, very early, and on Sunday morning, very early, the traffic cases reach a peak load. Is that true, Dr. Bates? Have I that information correct?
Yes, that is true.
The jovial customer is ushered outside and hasn't got sense enough to take a taxi cab. He tries to drive.
That's true.
What percentage of those who come in that period during the peak load on early Saturday morning and early Sunday morning have liquor on their breath?
About 90%, I should judge.
Well, who is represented by the 10%?
Chiefly those who are occupants of a car struck by an intoxicated driver.
Those who haven't been out on a wassail of some sort, but have been to a show, or who've been called into the streets for other reasons, and are the victims of the drunk driver?
That's so.
Do you find often on reception to the in the emergency ward that failure to take care of the victim of an automobile accident on the spot has rather serious consequences?
It may have, but under the plan or directions given to the police department who handle these accident cases by their directors, that problem has largely been eliminated. In other words, the policemen who are called to the scene of the accident are instructed as to the dangers of moving injured persons in ordinary means of conveyance.
Well, now, what do they do first when they come to the scene of an accident?
They determine first, to the best of their ability, the seriousness of a patient's injuries, particularly as to whether there are broken bones, which can be determined by the patient's complaints or by obvious deformities.
The patient usually knows whether his leg's broken or his collarbone or his back,
yes,
perhaps. And they can see if his arms are broken, of course.
And legs.
And then do the police attempt to apply splints at that time in order to keep the ends of the bones from jabbing the flesh?
Unfortunately, that stage of perfection hasn't been reached.
Well, what's the first rule in case of an accident?
At the scene?
Yes, at the scene of an accident.
The police who are present first immediately call for a patrol wagon or ambulance.
They don't attempt to move them in the back seat of an automobile?
Never.
At one time that was a practice, wasn't it, Doctor?
Yes, sir.
And what resulted from it?
Many more serious wounds and deformities occurred as a result of that practice. For instance, a simple fracture being transformed into what we call a compound fracture.
Instead of a clean, open bone, there are several splinters of bone.
And the jagged ends piercing the skin, and thus allowing infection to appear between the bone ends.
Then it's rather cruel for inexperienced persons to attempt to move the victim of an automobile accident, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Doctor.
As Dr. Bates turns away, we hear a siren from down the street, faintly, somewhat far off. Then there's a sudden commotion outside the entry. There's a scream of brakes and the clash of gears as an ambulance slides to a quick stop.
Suddenly, the door is thrown back. A police ambulance backs up to the receiving platform. Orderlies spring into position. A prisoner of the police is taken out of the police ambulance, placed on a table, and rushed immediately into the operating room, where we follow the case to its conclusion. This man, according to the police that we passed in the doorway just a moment ago, was shot as he was attempting to
Did you say that he was shot as he was attempting to snatch a place?
Snatch some places. As yet, we haven't understood exactly where it occurred. But here in the operating room, in the presence of the policeman, the man is hurriedly undressed. Physicians gather around. A preliminary examination is made. Underwear, red with blood, is torn from his body in order that he may be given the speediest of examinations. You probably can hear his cries. From where we've seen, the man has been shot low on the left side and once at least in the right arm. We will stand by and follow the case and see what happens.
One in the abdomen, and one through the lower left chest, and one through the right forearm. He's a serious condition.
Oh, there's a lot. Oh, Lord, there's a lot.
Having a lot of pain?
Yeah. On the side.
I can see your side.
Yeah.
Just what happened tonight?
No, I don't know. Oh,
what?
Lord, how much?
Were you shot?
Yeah, in the
side. Who shot you?
I don't know. I don't give some water, will you?
You been robbing any nurses or whatever?
No.
Pulling up nurses over.
Suspected to have been the man who's been pulling up
nurses, yeah.
John R.
That's what I understand.
There's been quite a police trap laid for that particular purse snatcher, hasn't there?
Yes, there has, brother, I understand. His condition is serious. He's being given intravenous saline now. That fluid put into the vein to help take the place of the blood that's been lost. He's hemorrhaging inside the abdomen at present. As soon as his condition picks up, he'll be taken right to the operating room, which his condition will warrant an operation. What's that
there? Have you gotten a story of this yet?
I haven't a story of the shooting yet, no, sir. The only thing I have is that he was shot by two of our men on the scout car. I don't know the reason yet. I haven't had a chance to talk to the officers.
Who do you know where it happened?
At Garfield and Bovian.
Garfield and Bovian. This is supposed to be the man that had been holding up nurses.
As I understand that he's been a purse snatcher. But, of course, I can't verify that yet until I talk to the officers.
They'll be there very
soon.
The bullet wounds, may I tell you, the bullet wounds in the bandit's body are so located that the surgeons do not dare to give him the water for which he begged. They know that he's doomed to die. Despite that, however, they make his last moments as comfortable as possible. But from this dramatic incident, let us get back to the situation that exists in the psychiatric ward.
This is Dr. James Stanton, who is psychiatrist for the receiving hospital. Doctor, how long has that situation existed in the third ward?
You refer to the overcrowding?
Yes.
It has existed almost from the very beginning of the hospital.
with periods from time to time when we have had relief due to the opening up of facilities in the state hospitals.
Well, how about those filthy mattresses up there? What can be done about that?
I know of nothing other than to replace them, or probably more properly, to develop some facility for the care of these patients in the state hospital system, or by some improvement in this local hospital.
What would you suggest, Doctor?
Well, a number of things must be considered in determining the proper suggestion to make. Obviously, no suggestion is proper that is not in line with the financial ability of the community to meet it. And of course, the financial ability of the community to meet this thing is not something that I am probably properly informed about.
Well, can you give those patients proper treatment up there?
No, I don't feel that we do, or can, with the present setup.
Well, what will result from the neglect of those patients?
Well, in some instances, patients, through failure to receive the proper modes of treatment, will, unless they reach the proper place quickly, will eventually lose their life.
That means that they will die as a result of the neglect of the city of Detroit.
It means just that.
That's almost unbelievable.
But it's true.
Do the people of Detroit know that that situation exists?
I don't believe they do. Some of them do, but I don't believe that sufficiently of them know it.
How much immediate money would it take to rectify that situation?
I'm afraid that I can't qualify as an expert in that field.
Well, how many will die then as a result of the city's neglect within the next year and a half or 2 years?
Possibly 10 or 12.
That'll mean that the city of Detroit, as organized society, will murder 10 or 12 of its charges in the next couple of years.
That's one way of expressing it.
That's a terrible indictment, Doctor.
I think so.
How much would it cost to build a hospital that would take care of not only the surplusage in the receiving hospital, but to take care of the 1,100 or more that are walking the streets that have been committed but cannot be received for lack of facilities?
I don't believe that I'm properly equipped to answer that.
Have you an idea of how much this hospital costs to build?
No, I have not. I understand that it roughly costs about $2,000 per bed to build a hospital with modern-day medical standards.
Doctor, has the result that you anticipate in the next couple of years, has that result been experienced in the past 2 years? Have 10 or 12 patients in that receiving hospital psychiatric ward died as a result of neglect in the past 2 years?
I don't know that we can specifically bring out any records and point that a given individual has come to that end. But I think it's fair to say that the failure to receive treatment at the proper time must have produced substantially that result.
Is that among elderly patients or young patients?
No, that has been essentially in the patients in the age group from 30 to 45.
And what is their malady? What is their...
I have particularly in mind those patients who are suffering with a variety of syphilis of the central nervous system.
That's ordinarily called paresis?
That's usually referred to as paresis.
Has the state any facility at all for taking care of those patients?
Yes, the state has a facility, but not sufficient to take care of the cases that come to light.
Is the hospital at Ypsilanti as overcrowded as the receiving hospital in Detroit?
No, I don't believe that it is.
Couldn't it share some of your burden?
It would seem so.
Should it be required to?
I think that it would be proper to discuss that matter with the authorities there.
There you are, ladies and gentlemen. What will you do as a result of these disclosures? Shall we face the situation, recognize that it exists, or shall we continue to shut our eyes, sidestep the responsibility, and let these unfortunates die? Another in this series of transcribed programs relating to the people's business next Saturday at this same time. This is Duncan Moore speaking from the Golden Tower Studios of WJR, the Goodwill Station, in the Fisher Building, Detroit.